Welcome to The Deep Dive, your shortcut to being truly well-informed. Today, we're jumping into something really fascinating. It's about change, potential change, within one of the world's oldest institutions, the Church of England. We're focusing on Gully Franciscani. She's a candidate, a really pioneering one, for Archbishop of Canterbury. And we've gathered, well, quite a stack of sources about her, her journey, her vision, and, you know, what her appointment could actually mean. It's pretty significant. So our mission here is to unpack all that, her unique background, the sheer weight of the role she's potentially stepping into, and the big conversations this whole thing kicks off about inclusivity, tradition, and maybe the future direction of faith itself. Think of this as your shortcut to understanding a really pivotal moment, giving you insights into leadership, social change, and how these ancient roles sort of grapple with modern life. Okay, so let's start there. Gully Franciscani, who is she, really? What makes her stand out so much in the church today, based on what we've seen?
Well, yeah, what's immediately striking is just how pioneering her journey has been. We're talking about an institution that's historically, well, very traditional, quite conservative in many ways. She's known for her knowledge, her experience, sure, but it's her background, her story that really makes her different.
And what specific parts of that story really jump out?
Oh, definitely her multicultural heritage. She was born to Iranian parents. And that background seems to give her a really unique perspective on navigating modern Britain, which is, you know, incredibly diverse. Our sources suggest this isn't just biographical detail. It genuinely shapes her approach, how she connects with different cultures, both inside and outside the church.
That is a powerful starting point.
Yeah.
And academically, she seems well equipped there too.
Oh, absolutely. Very strong educational background. She started with theology at Cambridge, so a really solid foundation, then went on to do postgraduate work at Oxford. This kind of academic rigor, it comes up repeatedly. It's seen as giving her this depth of understanding that's really respected.
So the academic side is strong, the personal experience unique. What about her path within the church itself? How did that progress?
Well, she was ordained priest back in 2006, started as a curate, then became vicar of All Saints Church right in central London. And her time there, it seems, was really marked by this commitment to inclusivity, to social justice, trying to reach everyone, you know, whatever their background.
And then she became Bishop of Loughborough.
Yes, that was in 2019. And that appointment really cemented her reputation, I think. It showed her as this forward-thinking leader, someone not afraid to push for change, for reform. Her whole path, really, from her roots right up to becoming a bishop, it speaks volumes about her qualifications and her vision for a church that's, well, diverse and active.
Okay, so that gives us a good picture of Gully. Now, the role itself, Archbishop of Canterbury, if she gets this, what exactly were you talking about? What's the weight of that position? People know the name, but maybe not the full scope.
Right, and it's fascinating when you dig into it. Understanding the sheer significance, historically and today, of the role she's in the running for. The Archbishop of Canterbury, it's an incredibly prestigious position, really pivotal within the Church of England, and actually the wider Anglican Communion globally.
How far back are we talking, historically?
Oh, way back. The office itself dates to the 6th century. So for centuries, it's been the symbol of unity, a central figure in spiritual leadership. It's got this immense historical weight.
So what does the archbishop do day to day, year to year? What are those core duties?
Well, they oversee the church's spiritual life, but also its administration, giving direction to bishops, clergy, that whole network. And they're the spiritual figurehead for Anglicans worldwide. That means engaging in dialogues with other Christian churches, interfaith discussions too, promoting peace, tolerance, respect on a global stage.
Sounds like it has huge reach beyond just the church, societal influence.
Exactly. A big part of the role is addressing contemporary issues, things affecting everyone. They often advise government on moral ethical questions, sort of a moral compass, as some sources put it, bringing those Christian values into the public square. Plus, there's involvement in charity work, community building, humanitarian efforts. It demands both, you know, deep spiritual leadership and very practical engagement with the world.
Right. So putting someone like Gully Franciscani into that role, considering its deep traditions, its influence, what does that really mean?
It feels immense. And this is where it gets really fascinating, doesn't it? Her candidacy isn't just about her qualifications. It's about potentially shattering a huge glass ceiling. I mean, if appointed, she'd be the first woman ever in a role that has always been held by men. That's genuinely historic.
It is. And the implications, they ripple outwards, don't they? Far beyond the Church of England itself. It feeds right into those bigger discussions we're having everywhere about gender equality, about representation, and, well, in all kinds of institutions, especially religious ones. It challenges norms that have been in place for centuries. So how might having a woman in that top job actually act as a catalyst? What kind of changes could we realistically see within the church?
Well, it sends a very powerful signal, doesn't it? That leadership can look different, that it can come from diverse backgrounds. Our sources suggest it could really energize and inspire women, both clergy and lay members, showing that, yes, even the very highest leadership roles are accessible. It could enrich the church's connection with its own diverse flock.
And could it shift the church's actual focus, its priorities?
Quite possibly, yes. Having a woman in that seat could subtly, or maybe not so subtly, reshape the church's approach. For instance, some sources mention her work on things like parish-level mental health support, moving beyond just traditional pastoral care to integrate, say, clinical help within the church community.
Yeah.
That's a practical example of her vision taking compassion and making it tangible. So yes, potentially a stronger focus on things like social justice, community engagement, maybe a more inclusive approach overall. And if you connect that back to her overall vision, it really offers this compelling picture for the church's future, one that seems very tuned into the needs of society today.
What exactly defines that vision? Is she trying to break completely with tradition or?
No, it seems more like a dual approach. She talks about a church that's, yes, grounded in its rich history, its tradition, but also completely open to the evolving world around it. A core part of her theology seems to be this idea of the church as a beacon of hope, of inclusivity. She's advocated for looking again at doctrines or practices that might even unintentionally push people away, especially marginalized groups, promoting a theology focused on love, justice, reconciliation.
Okay, so modernization sounds like a big piece of that puzzle then. How does she aim to achieve that?
It is, yeah. She clearly recognizes that while some people feel disconnected from traditional religious practices, so her vision includes bringing in new ways to worship, new ways to do outreach, using technology, for example, to enhance church life, make spiritual resources more accessible. Sources mention her support for things like digital ministries, online prayer groups, trying to reach younger people, maybe re-engage those who've drifted.
And is she looking outwards, too, beyond the church building itself?
Oh, absolutely. Community engagement seems to be a real cornerstone for her. She believes the church has this responsibility to be right there, involved in local efforts, tackling big social issues, poverty, mental health, climate change. She's known for building partnerships with local groups, trying to make the church a really active force for good, strengthening communities, showing faith through action, like, you know, church food banks or support networks.
What about inside the wider Anglican communion? That global network, does her vision address challenges there?
Yes, it extends there too. The Anglican Communion has its own complexities, its own disagreements on social issues, for example. Her approach seems to be about fostering dialogue, encouraging collaboration between different Anglican traditions, even those that disagree strongly, trying to build unity within that diversity, focusing on reconciliation and understanding, aiming for a more integrated future.
Now, a candidacy like this, especially for such a symbolic role, it's bound to stir up strong feelings. Let's look at the support she has, but also the challenges she faces. Our sources show she's got significant backing, right? From leaders, from ordinary churchgoers.
Yes, the support seems quite broad. Archbishop Justin Welby, the current archbishop, he's praised her. He mentioned her deep pastoral instinct and insightful theological perspective. And it's not just the hierarchy. We saw a quote from a congregation member saying something like, "Guli connects with people. Her vision reflects our diverse backgrounds." That kind of grassroots support speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Definitely. But it can't all be smooth sailing. What are the big hurdles, the major challenges she's likely up against?
Well, you'd certainly expect some resistance from the more traditionalist elements within the Church of England. Given its history, its patriarchal structure for so long, the idea of a female leader in the top spot, well, there's bound to be skepticism, maybe even pushback. It might not always be overt opposition to her personally, but resistance to changing that historical norm, that could be subtle or not so subtle.
And the internal church politics. I imagine that's a minefield.
It really is. Appointing an archbishop isn't simple. It involves navigating this complex landscape of different opinions, competing interests among bishops, clergy, laypeople, getting everyone aligned behind her vision. That would take immense diplomatic skill. It's not just about votes. It's about building consensus, building coalitions, needs real patience, real skill.
And then there are those wider societal expectations about women in leadership roles. How does that play into it?
Yeah, she'll have to perform this delicate balancing act, won't she? Balancing those societal pressures, the push for inclusivity with the church's own intrinsic values and traditions. They don't always line up perfectly. Finding that common ground, respecting both the external expectations and the internal doctrines, that's a constant negotiation.
And the reaction from the public, from the media, how's that looking? I'm guessing it's not uniform.
No, definitely varied. On one side, huge enthusiasm, especially in progressive circles. You see major newspapers framing her as this transformative figure, a symbol of gender equality, a real beacon of progress. But yeah, there's the other side. On social media, you see it all support and criticism. And in more conservative outlets, concerns are raised, often about her theological approach, arguing maybe it's straying too far from traditional doctrines. It fuels some pretty heated debate, as described in some sources. So her candidacy definitely sparks strong reactions right across the board. It really brings up that question, doesn't it? How do you navigate all that? These tangled expectations, centuries of history, while trying to carve out a new direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And to really get a sense of the potential impact, maybe we could quickly compare her approach to some of her predecessors. The role of Archbishop has seen different styles over the years, reflecting different priorities for the church, right?
Exactly. You had George Carey, for instance, back in the 90s into the early 2000s, generally seen as representing a more, shall we say, traditional view of Anglicanism. His successor, Rowan Williams, from 2002 to 2012, he brought a really strong academic focus, emphasis on multiculturalism, inclusivity, fostering deeper theological conversations.
And the current Archbishop, Justin Welby.
Right. Well, since 2013, he's been described as very hands-on, very critically responsive, particularly to big social issues, things like economic inequality, social justice, really pushing for the church to be actively engaged in tackling those modern challenges.
So against that backdrop, how does Gooley's approach seem distinct? What makes her different?
Well, her background is so deeply rooted in that pastoral care, that mission-focused leadership on the ground, that offers a really fresh lens, potentially. And her experience, you know, being the first female bishop of Loughborough, that's not just symbolic. It underscores this commitment to breaking down those traditional barriers. Sources suggest this could signal a real shift in how the Anglican Communion actually engages with gender, with diversity, moving from just talking about it to having representation at the very top.
Does her academic side play a role there, too?
I think so, yes. Being a scholar, her background might encourage a perhaps broader or more nuanced reading of Anglican theology. It could also open doors for richer interfaith dialogue, more collaboration. Her potential leadership, it feels less like just continuing the line and more like a clear evolution. It echoes how the church has always had to adapt, hasn't it, to an ever more complex world while still holding on to its core beliefs.
So Gooley Francis de Conti's candidacy. Whatever happens in the end, it really feels like it marks a critical moment, an evolution within the Anglican Communion, a definite move towards something potentially more progressive, more responsive as a church structure.
Yeah, her focus on social justice, on dialogue between faiths, on engaging with the community, that all resonates so strongly with what many people today expect, you know, relevance in a pretty secular world. Mm-hmm. And her advocacy for inclusivity, for change, it really challenges those longstanding norms. It seems to be inspiring people, clergy, and lay members alike to maybe rethink things, pushing the boundaries of what church leadership can look like.
It really does feel like her journey, her candidacy, marks this pivotal point in the church's ongoing story. It could set a really powerful example for leaders to come. And it leaves us with something to think about, doesn't it? As we watch this interplay between tradition and modernity, what responsibility do institutions like the church, institutions with such incredibly deep historical roots, actually have? How much should they reflect the changing needs, the changing faces of the societies they're part of? Something for you to ponder until our next deep dive.